We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hardman, welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 22. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. You can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. You can also follow them on IG at mintinc_USA. A couple announcements before we get into our episode. On Sunday, we had an amazing IG Live with Mark Jones, also known as at Living Rent Free. He was our guest on episode 16. So we had an IG Live for a couple hours talking about investing out of state, talking about house hacking, and really just having an open forum to connect with our followers, both of our followers, to answer all their real estate questions. And we know now, you know, a lot of people are home, a lot of people have adjusted work schedules. So I'm definitely planning to do more lives. If you have suggestions or people who you want to come on our live, definitely let me know. But it was a lot of fun. And thank you and shout out to everyone who supported us. Don't forget to leave us a rating and a comment. It'll help us move up in the rankings. It'll help us to reach more people. We definitely had an increase in ratings last week. So thank you to everyone for tuning in and for leaving us a rating. We're also on Twitter. You can follow us at Bred Podcast, at BRED Podcast. Take a moment, follow us there, interact with us. It's definitely a different kind of dialogue we have on Twitter. So definitely join in if you're on Twitter. We're also accepting show sponsorship. So if you're interested in sponsoring a show, send me a DM or an email. We're also offering paid IG posts. So if you have a course, if you have a product, et cetera, that would be valuable to our audience, the link is below in our show notes. You can fill it out, submit your ad and everything, and we can take it from there. We also have a lot of resources available from our trusted partners in the show notes that will help you on your journey to real estate investment. So everything from ways to raise capital, through vending machines and different things of that nature, how to build your credit, different guides as you're searching for properties. We have a number of resources down below, so definitely check them out. Let me know if you have questions about them. Some of them I have used myself, so I highly recommend those. But definitely be sure to check those out. And remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself. And if you're home or if you're on an adjusted work schedule, the best thing you can do right now is learn and continue to improve yourself. Lastly, sign up for our email list. By signing up for our email list, you'll get discounts, additional content, resources in our newsletter, which goes out periodically. So anytime any of our partners have discounts or anything they're offering, I email the email list immediately. So you definitely want to take advantage of that. Very excited about this episode with Jeremy Taylor. This is a brother who's really killing the game in real estate. Look forward to seeing what y'all think of it. Let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Very excited for this episode today. Here with me, I have Jeremy Taylor from Shreveport, Louisiana. Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us today, man.
Oh, thank you for having me, Doc.
For sure. So first, just give us like a general overview of who you are and what you do.
Well, my name is Jeremy Taylor. I'm a real estate investor full-time down here in the Shreveport, Louisiana market. I have three kids, beautiful wife, and You know, we just down here making moves, basically. I started real estate maybe 3 years ago. Got into it, or just jumped into it, and then do my proper due diligence. But mistakes make you great. So, you know, a lot of lessons learned on the way. And, you know, now I'm on up and up, and everything is, you know, on the up and up. So that's pretty much, you know.
For sure. And what was your childhood like, and what did you see, or maybe what didn't you see, that shaped your view of building wealth?
My childhood was pretty rough. I come from a family of eight. I'm the knee baby. Typical project living. Well, we had a project house, but outside the projects, the way it was set up. You know, we kind of moved around a lot as a youngin'. My brother Hot Dog, that was always a safe place, you know, we could always go to. I'm not going to say we didn't, you know, we had what we needed. My mom, she was self-employed. She cleaned houses, provided a great lifestyle for us. But, you know, things could have been better. So, I mean, growing up, I knew I wanted more. My mom always preached to me, you know, hey, there's more. Go for it. You know, if you see opportunity, go for it. Don't ever settle. And so I took that. I went to college, got a four-year degree, criminal justice. Then I ended up getting a master's in criminal justice as well. Ended up not getting a job in anything that I, you know, went to school for, and started teaching. I taught for 3 years, and then I got into the mental health. Mental health was something that I couldn't see me doing long term, and I had oddball jobs like Coca-Cola, different other little old jobs. And so I knew that I wanted more. And I had many, many business ventures. I did trucking, lawn service, landscaping, tried to do irrigation systems. I'm pressure washing. I pretty much did it all as far as investor standpoint. But I knew that I, you know, needed something that was concrete. And then I looked into real estate, and that's how I got on that journey. I knew that, you know, assets over liabilities meant more. And real estate, pretty much, you know, things go up, you know, more so going down. So.
For sure. And tell us about your beginnings in real estate. I know earlier you mentioned that, you know, you made some mistakes in the beginning, but that they helped you to move forward. So can you talk to us more about what the beginning was like real estate wise?
Yeah. So when I first got in 2016, fall of 2016, it was really spring of 2016, I applied for an adjudicated property. And a lot of people don't understand the adjudicated way. A lot of people think that you get the clear title to it when you actually don't. And so it was a situation where I'm not going to say that was a mistake, but it was a lesson learned. So I got into the adjudication deal. It dropped through. And then I applied for another adjudication in the fall of 2016. It went through. Closed on my first adjudicated property, I guess, winter of 2017. It was like January, February. And so when I closed on it, I thought that I was getting a clear title. Tried to take it to the bank, and they shot me down because, you know, we couldn't leverage it. You couldn't get title insurance and different things of that nature. So I had to hunt. Like I say, not doing my proper due diligence and homework, I didn't understand where I was. And so as I learned on the fly, I understood that I needed to get a quit claim deed signed by the original title holder. I paid $16,660 cash for it. Cash. And wasn't aware that I was going to get an equity spread of $72,000. The house appraised for $90,000. Well, it was a triplex. The triplex appraised for $90,000. Which gave me an equity spread of $72,000 at 80%. So when I got that equity spread, again, I didn't do my homework. And my brother Lamont, he would always tell me, Jeremy, educate yourself, you know, like let's talk about this. And I'd be like, oh, I'm gonna learn on the fly. So I continued buying adjudicated properties and tax sale properties. And he was, you know, the whole time telling me, hey, find some off the market deals. Don't do those. Maybe find an MLS here, maybe find an MLS there. So in 2017, I thought I was, you know, rolling, and it was, you know, just buying all of these properties and not doing my homework. I put myself in a huge bind. 2018, the debt came back. And so when the debt came back and it hit me, it was kind of like the market is now. I was devastated like the market is now. So all 2018, you know, my brother, he helped me, you know, educate myself, get myself together, you know, help me pull myself up by my bootstraps and, you know, keep it kicking. So a lot of lessons, I don't call them losses. I lost a lot of money, but a lot of lessons I learned on the way made me the man I am today in real estate. Now we have right at 30 units. We started buying September of last year. We had a revolving line of credit where we bought 5 properties off $125,000 revolving line of credit. And we paid for them all in cash. Wow. And so we strategically used that $25,000 line of credit to make those purchases and, you know, cash out refinance. One of them, we did a revolving line of credit on. One of them, we just actually today sold a flip that we did on one of the properties. So we definitely did our homework, due diligence, and, you know, we came back and we made it work. So that's kind of, you know, where we at this point.
For sure. For sure. And do you have a partner?
My wife.
Okay, cool. It's a great partner to have.
Best partner in the world.
Definitely. I have a couple questions. Can you explain for our listeners what adjudicated property?
Yes. Adjudicated property is a property that didn't sell in a tax sale. Mm. So the property has to first go to a tax sale. And if it doesn't sell in the tax sale, then it goes to what they call adjudication, meaning that it didn't sell and the owner didn't come and redeem the taxes on the property. So in Louisiana, in certain parts of Louisiana, New Orleans is different. Everywhere else in Louisiana, it has to go through the adjudication for 3 years in order for you to not be able to come back and redeem the property or whatever. So every property that I went, you know, got through adjudication, I made sure it was in the 3-year non-redemption period and the owner couldn't come back and redeem it. So, again, I won't say that they were bad buyers. I just didn't do my proper due diligence and homework. And I got in the situation to where I couldn't leverage those properties like I thought I was going to be able to. I know the first one I bought, I put maybe $10,000 in it. I was able to pull it back because I ended up getting a quick claim deed. But the second triplex that I bought, I was unable to get that $20,000 back because I got in contact with the people, but the people were unwilling to work with me in the beginning. And so with them not willing to work with me, I was unable to get that money back. And like I say, that credit card debt, it came and it came down on me. So anytime you think adjudicated, think tax sale property that didn't sell in a tax sale and is going through adjudication and you have to wait a certain period in the redemption deal in order to fully redeem it and not be able to come back and have that property taken away.
Got you. And then what is a quick claim deed?
A quick claim deed is a document that an owner signs to release any interest or ownership that he or she may have in the property. And a quitclaim deed is to a property is like a bill of sale to the car. So anytime you sign or any owner signs the quitclaim deed, meaning they're signing full all their rights over to the property. And of course, you have to do it in front of a notary, and they have to file it down at the courthouse.
Got you. For sure. So it seems like there were, like you mentioned, there were a lot of lessons in the beginning, and I like how, you know, you saw them as lessons, because a lot of people just generally, you know, naturally, when things don't go our way, we get very discouraged and think, you know, maybe real estate is not for me. But it seems like you just took what you learned and moved forward. And you also did mention that you're at about 30 units now. So can you talk to us about just all the lessons you took from there and how you're able to grow the portfolio since then?
Well, yeah, like I say, the first unit I got that I paid cash for, which was an adjudicated unit, it was a duplex in the front with a garage apartment in the back. And I was able to leverage that to go get more adjudicated units. So I got another triplex. I got a couple single family units that, again, I just bought cash for, so I didn't have any notes. So I was going in, and I used that $72,000 to purchase and rehab. So when I purchased those 8 units, I was at a standstill. And so I had to figure out a strategic way of going by buying more units until I could get those quiet titles. The quitclaim deed signed to those properties to get the title insurance on the properties. I started finding deals, and I started doing deals, owner finance deals. Owner finance deals is when you and the owner or the title holder, you guys pick up the property and you guys construct a deal that works for the both of you. And so I ended up talking myself into a 6-unit apartment complex. We purchased it for $97,000. The building is actually worth like $245,000 as it actually sits. It was fully occupied, bringing in $2,100 a month. So in doing that, the bank allowed me to I control the asset. So with me controlling the asset, it looks good on my rent roll. And when you show the bank your rent roll, you don't necessarily have to show where you owe or how much you owe, different things of that nature. So this brought my cash flow up and lowered my DTI. So in doing that, I had a bank say, okay, well, Jeremy, we'll give you a shot. I ended up fighting, getting the quick claim deed side on another property, and they allowed me to leverage a property. So when they allowed me to leverage a property, we basically took one property. They gave us a $25,000 line of credit, revolving line of credit, and we started buying cash properties. We bought a single family unit for $30,000. So I'll tell you how we got it. We bought it for $30,000. We put $20,000 down, and I convinced the owner to allow me to do a cash out refinance, and I pay him the other $10,000 as soon as we close. So we did what we call a credit sale deed. And basically a credit sale deed is the person who we owe the money to is the first lien holder until we cash out refi and we pay him off. Well, the way it goes is when you close, the title company automatically pay off your liens. So your liens are paid off, then you receive a check for the remaining balance. That house appraised at 46, I think. And of course, we took that cash. We had another property that had 2 units on it, and we bought it for 42.5. So I convinced the woman to allow me to give her $20,000 cash. And once we refied the property, we were able to pay her off. And we did that same thing again. We bought another property that had 2 units. We bought it off MLS. So we put $12,000 down on it. We refied it, and we bought another single family unit. And in our market, the equity spread is crazy. So with the equity spread being so great, it allows you to do a cash out refi. Even if you don't pull 80% of the equity off, it allows you to pull some cash and go make cash purchases on cheaper homes to continue to build that portfolio while making renovations to the property that you refi.
Wow.
Makes sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. There's a couple of things I'm pulling up. I'm pulling from what you're sharing. So the first thing is you're really good at speaking with owners and convincing them to agree to terms that work for you, that work for both parties. How have you been able to develop that skill? Because in the examples you mentioned, it was a different thing you did for each owner. There's only a few deals. How did you develop that skill?
I guess that gift of gab, man. it's more of a situation where if you can draw something on paper and you can make numbers line up and make sense. It's just a situation where, you know, if you can draw something up on paper, and we'll just talk example loans. And this could be me and you doing a deal. I'll say, mm-hmm. Hey, you have a house for $30,000. I only have $20,000 cash. I'll give you $20,000 cash. I'll refi that house in 2 weeks, and I'll give you the other $10,000 cash. I'll draw it up on paper. You give me the house for 30, write it on paper. I'll give you $20,000 cash down. I'll have my banker say, okay, well, this is how this is going to go, do, 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 do. 80%, this house is going to appraise at 46. 46K. 80% of 46K is 37. So that'll allow me to give you your 10 back and take my money and reinvest some money into that home, to where I could come back, pull my 20 out, and continue doing deals the same way. So I'll have you paid in 2 weeks, and you getting full price off from what you asked for the house. So is that something you would do?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, that's what the owners say. Yeah, yeah, come on with it. Because a lot of times when you know you don't have the cash up front, give the owner – you know, exactly what they ask for. Don't go in and really negotiate, especially a $30,000 deal that you know that's going to get appraised for way higher than what they're asking for. So you do your homework and you go in and say, okay, hey, I'll give you 30. Let me give you $20,000 down. Who going to walk away from $20,000? Not many people. So I'll give you $20,000 down, and let me give you another $10,000 in 2 weeks. They'll jump on it like, you know, a dog in on another dog in heat. So you just gotta make it sound good, you know.
For sure. And do you pull comps beforehand to know what it might appraise at, or do you already talk to the bank? Like how do you know that it'll appraise for more than they're asking for?
I have a great realtor. Her name is Mary. Mary and Clayville. Man, she's always one phone call away. And if she don't answer, she would definitely give you a call back later on, either that day or the next morning. So I'll say, hey, Mary, I need you to run the comps on this property. And the comps aren't going to be too far off the appraisals. So she get it in. She sent it to me in an email. Boom. Hey, Jeremy, it's a great deal. Jump on it. I jump right on. I don't waste any time. I'm at the owner's neck. I'm at his neck. Hey, let's get it. Let's get it. Let's get it. I was telling you earlier about a 10-unit package deal. Got a 10-unit package deal in the pipeline. I've been at the owner. We looked at the 6-unit apartment complex, and it's a quadplex that's going to be with it. So that's 10 units. I said, hey, what are you asking for those properties? He said 300. I said, I'll give you 275. Well, actually, I said 250. Then we met in the middle at 275. So he said, bet. Boom. I got him. Okay. I'll go walk the properties. I'll go look at the properties. And I don't mind giving him the 275, but I'll give him a hard time. Say, ah, let me give you 260. And he'll say, oh, I'm really needing 275. We're not going to argue. Give him the 275. That 10-unit package deal is going to come back and appraise at 400K.
Wow.
So knowing that that package deal is going to come back and appraise at 400K, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to tug too hard. But if I can get you, I'm going to try it now. So knowing that that 10-unit package deal is going to come back at 400K, I'm gonna get that property. I'm gonna get that. Well, we getting it under contract now. We plan on getting the appraisals done, and you know we're gonna close that deal. Cross collateralize some equity as a down payment, and we close that deal. That whole package, all of them are 2-bedroom, 1-bath, rent at $700 a month. You do the math.
Is that 10 units?
In units, 700 a unit, that's $7,000. And I mean, I think the note on it was going to be like 1,400.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so good. That's you know, spread.
That's dope cash flow. So why play with, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of times, I'm not going to say owners don't know what they have, but they don't care to deal with it, so they just say forget it. Tomorrow, oh my God, I forgot today. I was actually supposed to go look at a 4-unit quadplex today for 159. And it's gonna appraise at 250-275. So I'm gonna have to call him and reschedule that. So what's gonna happen is the quadplex, he has it listed at 159. It's going to appraise at 250-275. It's fully occupied, but the rents are kind of all over the place. I kind of don't like acquiring tenants. If I can buy it empty, you know, and bring in my own tenants, I'd rather do that. But it has great cash flow, $600 a unit. No, I'm sorry. Two of them 600, one of them 580, or two of them 580, 2-6 and 2-580, and they two of them pay on the 28th, and one paid by the 6th, and I'm gonna make it work for now until you know they mess up. But
how come you don't like inheriting tenants?
Well, they kind of be in the system with the old landlord, and the old landlord may be a little bit more lenient than I.
Yeah.
I don't know who can be more lenient than me because I'm definitely soft. I try to be a pit bull man, but I'll be soft as tissue paper. and I just, you know, I don't know, man. When you inherit tenants, man, they don't confront landlords about issues that already be there. They'll confront the new landlord. So when I go in, I fully renovate everything. It is needs to be renovated. New plumbing, new electrical, new roof if needed, new floors, new paint, or if the wall need tape and floated, we make sure we tape and float all cracks, fix any sheetrock holes. I want to go in and do that. So me going in and doing that, I feel I need to raise the rent maybe $25-$50. And, you know, some tenants aren't comfortable with you coming in raising rent immediately. Mm-hmm. So now you got a problem.
Right. That makes sense. And how do you find motivated sellers? How do you find your deals?
Driving for dollars. You get in that car. Me and my wife, we might go out on Sunday evening and say, hey, let's go find some distressed properties. If she off, we'll ride, we'll look, we'll write that address down, true people search. We'll look up the property address. If it's under an LLC, we look up the LLC on the state website. We find who the owners are. We go to true people search. We find that owner. Once we find that owner, we call them. We hound until you say, hey, look, I don't want to sell. Or, hey, okay, let's look at your deal. Let's put your deal on the table. So driving for dollars, that's pretty much my way.
Right. Nice. And how do you get the bank to refinance so quickly? I know some people mention, it needs to stabilize for a little while, but how do you get to a point where the bank will refinance the home after just a couple of weeks?
Make the numbers make sense. And if the numbers make sense, man, that bank ain't gonna hold back. My banker that I'm dealing with now, he's young, motivated, great guy named Jonathan, man, Bank of Montgomery. Shout out to Jonathan. Big shout out to Jonathan. Jonathan, when I tell you he's in a situation where he just say, hey, let's do it. So anything I've brought to him, he say, Jeremy, let's make sure the numbers make sense first. If the numbers make sense, we send it to underwriting. Underwriting gonna get back to Jonathan within hours or 24 hours. And once underwriting get back to him, we order in that appraisal. Appraisal come usually come out, check in within 48 hours. Once he set that appraisal and they come back, 3 days. 3 days, we close. 3 days from the day that the appraisal is submitted, we close in that refi.
For
so
sure.
That's just how he rolls. And with him rolling like that, hell, you can't find a better banker right now, baby.
For sure. It seems like you have a nice formula here. You find the distressed properties driving for dollars. You call the owners till you get them. You propose a good deal. You have the bank. You have financing, all that stuff in place. It sounds like you have a pretty good formula. Is owner financing, would you say, is your primary strategy that you use these days?
Secondary.
Okay. What's the primary one?
Buying cash.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're in a sense to where we can take $20,000 and $30,000 cash and say, hey, I want to buy that property cash. And we just use our revolving line of credit and we say, let's go. Hey, Jonathan, I need you to write me a check for $30,000. This Friday, we got a duplex that we buying. Jonathan, I need you to write me a check for $28,000. You're going to write the check. We're going to close at 3 p.m. Easy. You find the owner with a distressed property, say, hey, what are you asking for that property? They may say $40,000. Let me give you 30. I'll give you 30 cash. We close in 2 weeks, and we'll be done with it. Now, if it's something like the 10-unit package deal, we say $275,000. Of course, it's more of it's an equity play plus cash flow. So you win it in both senses right there. So now just go in and you fix them up and you make them right and, you're good. So not tripping and not losing any, sleep over that at all. And you just basically distressed deals are some of the best deals.
Right.
Foreclosure. I was telling you earlier about triple netting. Mm-hmm. I know triple netting is something real big in California. I can't think of the guy's name. Black guy. Look like he looked black and Asian. God, I can't think his name. I'll find out later on. But I look at his YouTube channel, and he talk about triple netting all day. And triple netting is a great retirement setup. Like if you, that's something that I really, really want to get into. So we found this 3-story building.
And what is
4,690 square feet. Huh?
Can you explain what triple netting is? We haven't had a guest with that experience yet. So if you could give a brief definition and then get into it, that would be great for our listeners and me who are not familiar with it.
Okay, triple netting. I can't tell you what the 3 N's start with or what they stand for, but triple netting is basically buying commercial responsible for the four walls and the roof, the structure and the roof. So with you being responsible for the four walls, the structure and the roof, the person you're leasing the building to is responsible for everything inside of the building, and I do mean everything. They're also responsible for insurance and taxes. So basically, you're responsible for the note on the building. So only overhead you got is the note on a commercial building, and everything else is straight cash flow. So this building we're looking at, again, like I said, it's a three-story, 4,690 square feet building, and we've got them down to $120,000. Well, as the building sits, it sits at $250,000. Triple net leasing is appraised based off of cash flow. The building per square feet of you're looking at $14 a square feet. And well, that's annually. Let me say that annually. So if you're looking at that building at $14 a square feet, you're looking at $60,000 annually, which breaks it down to $5,000 a month.
Wow.
And all I'll have to do to that building is go in what you call, I don't know if a lot of listeners are familiar with the term prehab, but prehab is basically prepping the building for the person who plans to come in and lease it, meaning you're ripping up the floor, you're getting rid of any issues within the building. You don't have to fix any electrical. You don't have to fix anything of that nature. Well, I'm sorry. Let me not say that. You want to make sure the mechanics are in good condition. And the mechanics are your plumbing, your electrical, your HVAC. Those are pretty much your mechanics. So once you make sure your mechanics are in good standing, you want to make sure it's not any mold or anything that's like that that's going to, you know, harm or, you know, make them shy away from the building. Go in, make sure the structure is sound, make sure the roof is, you know, sound. You bring in a tenant.
Wow.
They sign a 10, 15, some of them sign 20-year leases. So we're trying to find a medical, we want to find a medical facility that's willing to come in and lease that building in that area because it's in a medical area.
Gotcha. Wow. That is very cool. That is very cool. It's like a lot less work than, you know, residential as far as the rehab side of it.
Oh, now I tell you what, it might cost me $80,000 to go in and prehab. Mm-hmm. Right, I'll be all in $200,000. Right, so the numbers have to make sense in the triple net deal as well. So the reason I'm trying to get it at $120,000, because the building sits at $250,000 as is. If I go in and do $80,000 all in, 80% of $250,000, I think is like $200,000, $225,000, something like that. So that puts me at a break even. Well, once I get a tenant, showing on paper that I got a potential tenant, well, the appraiser is going to come back and say, okay, well, you're getting $14 a square feet. You're bringing in $5,000 annually. This is what this building is going to appraise for. So if that building appraises, which we know is going to appraise at $400,000 plus, then I'm putting another $200,000 in my pocket on the back end because I'm going to refi it. And I'm gonna pay the note on a $4,600 square feet building, $4,000 mortgage. I don't mind paying that mortgage. That mortgage ain't gonna be nothing but $2,000 a month. And it may be cheaper than that because the rate just dropped. So now we're looking at doing it at a 4% and not a 5.25.
Gotcha. Wow, this is really good. What I like about this talk here is the creativity. You know, with every asset class, it's just a lot of creativity. And I just keep thinking about in the beginning. You know, you kind of fell on your face a little bit. You kind of dove in and didn't do your due diligence. But now it's like you have, as we're talking, you know exactly what's supposed to happen at every step, you know, all the projections, all the numbers, and you have people in place so that you won't make those same mistakes you made in the beginning. And then, you know, since then you've been rolling, it seems.
True. Shout out to my brother, Emmanuel. Shout out to my brother, Derek. Shout out to my brother, Pierce. And, you know, again, shout out to my brother, Hot Dog. We all have these calls. We talk, we speak. We keep each other in line. And so, as I construct these deals or put these deals together. I'm running these deals in our group, Real Estate Kings. You know, I run these deals, say, hey, does this make sense? Well, I know Hot Dog is going to make sure I've done my proper due diligence. I know Derrick Johnson is going to question every corner. You know, you got to have your biggest critic. And he's definitely one of our biggest critics in the group. I know Pierce, you know, he do a lot of the hands-on work. So he can always tell me what it'll cost to go in and do whatever it is. Now, I have GCs that I deal with. Shout out to Justin. But, you know, it's good to have somebody within the group that's going to, you know, help make sense of it. And Emmanuel is the guy that's going to listen to it. If it sounds like a good deal, he going to tell you straight up. Don't sound like a good deal, he's going to say, I ain't feeling that. So, you know, you got every avenue covered within the group. So that's, you know, shout out to my bros and, you know, we make it work.
For sure. For sure. Can you, I mean, I think it's great that you are surrounded by people who are doing the same things and who can give you different perspectives. And I think that's very important because, you know, a lot of times our people, we don't like hearing from people. We don't like being critiqued. We don't like receiving feedback from people who have our best interests at heart. True. So I think it's very good that you're at a place where you can receive information and feedback. And as you mentioned, it's helped you to spot good deals. It's helped you to start to notice things and to grow to where you are now.
True. Now, let me also mention this. My wife can also be my biggest critic at times. I'm not a no type of person. I'll never say what you can't do. And I don't like for people sometimes to say, Jeremy, what you can't do. Because when you say what I can't do, that just burns something up in me to say, hey, go do it. But my wife, she pulled my reins on me. And she said, come on back. Come on back. I didn't mean to say what you can't do. Let's simply just evaluate the situation and let's figure out if it's the best deal, you know, moving forward. Like let's be honest about it and strategic about it. So shout out to my wife, Chanel Taylor, man. One of the best business partners I ever had in my life.
For sure. For sure. And how involved are your kids? I'm not sure how old they are, but how aware are they of what's happening?
My kids are my son is 4, my oldest son is 4, my daughter is 2, and my youngest son is he'll be 11 months on the 20th. Man, they are actually who I push for me, but Lamont to tell you, man, like in a day go by you don't see me with my kids or hear my kids behind me, and you know, we all ride when we drive for dollars. And if my wife is at work, my kids are with me. We on the project site. Hey, what's going on? And, you know, I teach my kids about assets, liabilities, you know, what to look for going forward in life. Like, this is the family business. So my kids, they are who I do this for. I tell people all the time, you know, like, I don't have to see a red cent off of it right now. Just let me live long enough to be great and my kids prosper from it. So I love them. They're my babies.
For sure. For sure. And then are you mostly investing in the Shreveport area?
Currently, yes. I'm looking at some structures in Monroe. I'm waiting to dive off the deep end in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Man, I know when I start, you know, like you gotta have a line of credit that's $500,000, you know, and better. So when you're dealing with markets like that, it's so competitive, you have to be able to, you know, really go down there and play. So I look forward to coming to LA.
There's a lot happening here, man. That's good. So what does the future look like? What are you hoping to build towards? See, now you have about 30 and some pending deals potentially coming under contract. What does the future look like for you?
I want to get to, it's not a certain amount of units, mm-hmm. but I want to get to a certain income. Mm-hmm. Once I reach that certain income, I want to make sure that, you know, my system is self-ran. Like it can actually run itself without me being there. I don't want to be in the front much longer. I want to be able to, you know, take the back seat and let it be a, you know, self-ran system. And the proper cash, I feel, will allow me to do that at some point. Right now, I feel like I have to scale up. And again, it's not to a certain number of units, but to a certain cash flow. And once I reach that certain cash flow, then I pretty much know what I want when I want it. And if I'm not getting what I want when I want it, you know, I'm not going to, you know, be as anxious to move forward with a deal. So I want to be able to do Airbnbs. I want to be able to, you know, branch out to the LA market, the Cali market, period. I want to be able to branch out to the Georgia market, the Florida market, and the New York market. I want to be able to hit those markets where, you know, people travel, do different things, because that's big money. That's big money.
So, for sure.
My end goal is cash flow. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say my end goal is reaching a certain cash flow, being comfortable, and, you know, getting to the point to where I'm not having to, you know, be as anxious for deals and do only the deals that, you know, I feel make sense at the time and, you know, not just have to rush and do deals.
For sure. For sure. It's very exciting, man. Very exciting. I'm just inspired by this, man. I'm just inspired because, you know, it started off kind of, you know, you had your struggles, and then we kind of just talked through the progression and talked through how you approach different deals and different deal structures and going into triple net, which we haven't talked about on the show yet. So, I mean, I've just been very, very inspired hearing your story, man.
I appreciate it. And I tell you what, man, I feel like I kind of dropped the ball on the information with the triple net. But what I'll do is, man, if you'll have me back later on.
Yeah, we can do an update.
I'll have everything mapped out from the way that you go about finding your deals, sure, how to construct a deal, present it to the bank, how the GC is going to come in and, you know, do everything from start to finish. So, you know, and how to actually get the building leased and find the people who actually, you know, want to come into the building. So I definitely, sure, like I said, if you'll allow me, have all of the information, you know, within due time.
Definitely. Yeah, we could definitely do an update at some point, you know, but then you'll have your medical office tenant in there and everything will be all worked out. So for sure.
Hell, I might have two.
Nice. That'll be good, man.
Oh, yeah, man. That's definitely interesting.
For sure. And what is one or two things you would say to someone who is a new real estate investor? They're kind of nervous. They don't really know where to start. They heard real estate is cool, but they don't know what to do. They don't know how to start, and they're kind of scared. What would you say to somebody like that?
I would tell them if they could find somebody locally, talk locally before you venture off into those Instagram and Facebook stars. Find somebody who come from a real place. Like you said earlier, man, you got a lot of people that listen to, you know, others. They don't like to, you know, be critiqued and listen to those around them. So start off locally. Get that story from that person that you know, that success story, and do your homework. Start locally, get that success story, and do your homework. And as you're doing your due diligence while following that person locally, then that's going to put you in a situation where you're not afraid anymore. You can actually say that I can. I know I say it all the time. A lot of people look at somebody and say, especially me, they say, well, if Jeremy can do it, I can. It's not as simple as you think, but it's worth it, man. It's worth it. So I would definitely tell someone to, you know, find that local investor first before you go finding that Instagram star. Find that local investor. Do your homework and, you know, it's worth it.
For sure. For sure. Is there anything else you wanna share with us as we close in a minute?
Moving forward, man, if you haven't learned anything from this coronavirus whole deal, man, you have to have a backup plan. And I'm not saying that, you know, real estate is the only avenue. I'm not saying that at all. But find you some sort of backup plan that's going to put you in a situation to where you're not hurting. You're not, you know, you're not put in a bind in the sense where, you know, fear is driving you crazy. And, you know, I see a lot of people around me, you know, they finna be off for the next month. And I got to accommodate my tenants because they didn't put back profit. And I don't mind accommodating my tenants by no means because I'm a helpful person. But, man, find, you know, some hustle. And real estate is a safety net to allow you to say, hey, equity talks. Everything else, you know, it is going on out the door. So when you got something that you can go pull a couple dollars from, man, jump on that. The market is wide open right now. Jump on that. Like, I'm not saying pray on people downfalls, P-R-A-Y, but pray on what, you know, you can, you know, come up on, P-R-E-Y, you know, pray on it and, you know, like move strategically in doing whatever it is that you're doing. Not saying that, you know, pray on the weak, but pray on the system. And the system has shown you its flaws. So capitalize on it. Capitalize on the system, systemic flaws.
For sure. For sure. Well, I appreciate you hopping on, man. This is inspiring. Like I said, you know, starting, you know, a little shaky and now you caught your stride and you're heading up. So appreciate you being so candid with us today.
Oh yeah, man. Anytime, like I say, I definitely want you to invite me back.
For sure.
And maybe we could possibly do a group session, me and the real estate kings, and you know, I share that triple net experience, man. And you
dope,
know,
dope.
We all move forward with some kind of triple net leasing.
For sure, man. Awesome. Well, thank you everyone for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast, at BRED Podcast. Looking forward to talking to you all soon.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.